Emily Beatty is a Somerville-based artist working in multiple disciplines: movement, text, space, film, and interactive media to create performance in many formats. Her process includes researching choreography, exuberantly performing movement, curiously exploring film, and demanding more out of the dance and technology works she thinks up. Most times, her research and collaborative works result in body-based movement performances. Returning themes in her work are her interrogation of the blend of live and processed experiences and the elusive nature of real connection between one another. This is Emily's Lab.
Hello and welcome to our lab. We were told when we were building it out that we had unlimited resources to invest, and we were allowed to defy the rules of space and time. So I'm excited to share it with you guys. First and foremost, to step into this lab, you need to be properly equipped with soft edges, no shoes, bare feet on the warm earth, a nervous system ready to evolve, and a mindset towards collaborative community. So as you can see, though there is a line to get in, everyone is arriving right on time on Grid Switch Day. We're making the preparations to commemorate the switch away from an old electric grid. Do you smell something kind of earthy and dank? Anyway, and onto the new grid run on something more intelligent. Come. We have a common vision. So as you can hear, we speak together. Did you feel that in your feet? Common work. We move together, we build together, and we feast. We eat together. We are ritualizing a network of seen and unseen connections between people. In our shared time, we'll raise the energy to switch the grid and keep this new connected way of life continuing. At my lab, we value empathy, collective transformation, and fun.
Thanks for letting us come to your lab. Hello, Emily. How are you?
Welcome, welcome. I am great. Good to see you all.
You as well.
So exciting. Can't wait. Like that. Doesn't that sound like such an amazing lab? I was just like, I want to be in that lab.
My toes are, they're like wriggling to be in the field. How are you feeling today, Emily?
I am good. I am doing really well. I'm feeling good.
I'm glad to hear it.
That is exciting. So we're going to get right into it. We have a couple of questions that we're going to ask you. We're super excited to have you at the lab today. Well, actually, we're excited to be in your lab. My apologies. this is your space,
our house. Our lab.
Exactly. This is our lab. So we're going to get started with some questions and take it from there. So the first question that we're going to ask you today is, when did you first know you were creative? Like, what was that moment for you that you were like, I can define this as being a creative person?
In my life?
Yes.
Like from when I was very small. Okay. I think it was in some art classes. Maybe it was in middle school. I think it was the earlier memory, but in middle school, we were trying to draw this bird on a branch, but for some reason I had to have like 16 birds that were all like singing in this nightclub, and like one of them looked like Frank Sinatra, even though I'd never seen Frank Sinatra. I just was like, wow. How did I just like an expansive explosive like I couldn't stick to this one perfect thing. I had to kind of radiate out, and I think in elementary school, same thing with some sort of like circus scene that was just like super intense and quite large. And I think some of the template in terms of like live performance and creativity came from my mother, who would make these like elaborate games. It was not like find the treasure. It was like, here's a map that you have to then answer a question like layer upon layer. So that kind of came from her, and then I think I would make similar complex games that not everybody wanted to play.
Mm. Yeah.
But I know. But that's kind of how I think that was what I defined as creativity. They're just games I would make up. They have no name.
I love it. Club love Nightingale. That's in my mind right now. I'm just like,
yes.
Have you ever pictured birds in a club? I'm like, what even? How do you even get to that point? And I think that just shows that the mind, the brain, and how it's possible for it to just expand and go wherever it needs to go. And I love the journey part of it, like these elaborate kind of like tasks that you needed to do to get to this kind of place or get to whatever you need to get to. But I think that's absolutely amazing. And I feel like I would jump into another question, but I'm gonna try to keep to my script. I guess the next question is, what in your personal life has influenced you to choose your career?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Great question. In my personal life, I think when I first started, because I'm first and foremost a trained dancer, and I began in my kitchen, but then technical training, if you will, was in the form of ballet. And I was really not interested in being verbal and out there. But if you wanted me to be physical and out there, no problem at all. There's something like a shyness, I guess, about like publicly speaking. And so there's a concentration that was required when you're 7 to like get it together and like train in ballet. So that lent really well to how I wanted to express myself in the world.
Sure.
So I could be seen as a good dancer because I was just like focused, and I was really interested that it was non-verbal but still expressive. Mm-hmm. So that's like kind of where it somewhat started. And then I guess a lot of the creativity we talked about before. Any other personal? I think I really, you know, I love, I'm going to say make believe or magic. Really, that the line between like science and myth and stars and all of that, I just was like really enraptured with, like from a very young age.
Are you Jay? Are you and Jay the same person?
I know, right? I was just like, you know, it's like a
are
mirror.
You, happening. Or are you not Jay? That is my question today. Because that is Jay.
No, that's a big question. If you read sci-fi.
I do. Yeah. Yeah.
He does. Yes. Yeah. He does.
Okay.
We'll talk offline. We'll do some book recs. I mean, I wonder though, you mentioned the influence that your mother had on you with her creativity. Was that kind of apropos of the rest of your family? Did it ever feel like you were the lone artist there, or was it a shared thing that you had with your family?
Great question. My mom's a librarian. My dad has done many different things, salesman, farmhand, roofer, insurance salesman, contractor, a bunch of different things. By trade, they would say no. But in my house, I felt like my mom is really an artist, you know. She's a public servant and really likes to do that all the time and kind of make the community just do special things, provide things for community. My sister is really a writer, very good writer, very good. My brother and my sister really consume books at an alarming rate. So while none of us, I would say that I would be the only artist by, I guess, profession, if you can say that. Did I feel alone? Not really. I think more like towards my 20s when I'm like, oh wait, this is for real. This is my career. That's where the rubber hits the road. And I was like, okay, like I've got to figure this out. There's no model. Right. There's no adult model for this. Right.
Yes.
So I was like, oh, wow. And I see the benefit of my peers, like, oh, yeah, my mom's an artist. And like, this is, it's totally different. And I was like, oh, yeah, like, mm-hmm. that would, I would have loved to see that. But, you know, made it.
Right. And were they supportive of that? Was it like a.
Yeah, awesome. They were. And geez, I hope I will be, because like I got into two, I was raised in Virginia. I got into two state schools. Excellent. Awesome. But no, I went to the Boston Conservatory, and I remember I'm on like opening in the letter and me kind of being like, still like on the fence, like, am I going to do this? Am I going to like be, go train and be a dancer in another city at a private college? Wow. All that. And my mom was like, she was just like, yeah. She's like, I'm so excited you got in. And I was just like, I don't know. And now I'm like, oh gosh, I hope I can be there for my kid if they're like, let's do this. So yeah, I would say they were very supportive. They were very supportive. They probably believed in me more than I did. I was just like, all right, here we go. Yeah. Resources this way.
That's such a powerful moment, I think, because I think it comes up, particularly when you're first starting out, but honestly, it keeps happening. Nao and I had a moment this week where she just said something higher than what I had been like allowing to be possible for myself. And I think sometimes to have people, especially people that know you really well, believe in you or imagine greater than you allow yourself to imagine for yourself. It's so vital just for being on this journey and in this path. Agree. So I love that you had that.
Yeah. And I think it solidifies our identity in that in some way, you know, so much of what we're going through and what we're experiencing as creative people, the first step that we usually struggle with is identifying as that, identifying as a dancer, identifying as a singer, whatever it is, whatever our discipline is. And I think having people say, no, you can do this. It's like, okay, cool. Like Jay was saying, these are people I know. These are people who love me. These are people who support me. And they are helping me sort of solidify this identity as a creative, as an artist. So cheers to that. Cheers to having, you know, families support us, even though not everybody experiences that. But it is an amazing feeling to have that. And I can totally resonate with that as well. Super supportive parents.
Yeah. It's about support and also just a lot of trust, I think. How complicated a little bit, because I had been training this line of ballet, and then I went to school and I was like, oh my gosh, modern dance, contemporary dance, like, whoa, you know, wow. And I really, so I diverged from that path. And so every once and then sometimes my mom will ask, like, so you didn't become a ballerina because and this, we have to have the discussion again. And you know, at a point like when I was 21 or 22, I just couldn't, this is very, you know, one-sided, but I couldn't see myself like being a fairy princess forever. Just not my vibe. I was like, I don't know if I'm gonna be like 40 trying to be a princess. I can't hardly do that now. There are many other roles in ballet, like many. But that's what I was just like, and then one other thing I'll add is that another person that kind of was supporting me that I didn't know actually very well I traveled with my friend to Hawaii before I graduated high school, and his mother was just like, oh, like, nice to meet you, you know, what are you doing? And I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going to go to dance school. I'm going to be a dancer, you know, and like expecting the whole like, oh, that's going to be a short career. And she was like, oh my gosh, we need you so much. And I was like, what?
Wow.
And it really like, she treated me like I was a doctor or a lawyer. And I was like, whoa, getting choked up.
That's amazing.
But it was just like, it flipped everything. I was like, what? Like, I don't even know what to do with this feeling. I hope I do the right thing. So,
That's beautiful.
That's so amazing.
Yeah.
She's really cool. Cool lady. Yeah.
Well, I'm just like, where do we go from here?
I feel like we've talked so much about, like, you know, your path in there, and I wonder how would you describe your artistry? What does that actually look like?
Great
for folks getting to know you and your work.
Yeah. So right now I'm at the beginning stage of moving into interactive immersive work, so performance work. Although,
can you actually describe that a little bit for us? Like, what does that mean?
So as opposed to my previous work, where there'd be an audience seated and then a stage, super delineated stage, they never cross physically. There'd be a dance up there, the audience sits, they absorb it. We talk about it afterwards in the lobby. Now immersive work is where those spaces are blended. So audience is very close to me. I'm very close to the audience. Everything going on with their nervous system is affecting our performance. It's a performance that's built for audience participation. That's, I guess, the interactive part, versus being solid and sealed. And there's no way that, you know, aside from clapping or not clapping, can they affect it? So it's very interactive. And coming from where I came from training wise, it can be risky. You don't have control. You don't have total control. So my work is offering that to the audiences and also offering it to myself. I really feel like it's a gift to work that way. And the material I'm working with now is a lot of like myth work. Other times, other places, other lands, speculating the future, things like that.
Wow.
Why that? Sounds really right. You exciting. Talk about, and it's so exciting and it's risky. And so I'm wondering what endeared you to take that risk and move from, you know, a form, especially that is so. I think we all know that ballet in particular is like, it's a classical form, so it's more about rules and structure and all those pieces. And this seems to be the exact antithesis to that in a really beautiful way. And I'm just like, where's that line coming from?
Right. Where'd that turn come from? I think I can make the work with just stage work, not just stage work, but really hard to make stage work. I've done it. I've performed. I've toured with this amazing artist, David Rousseff / Reality Dance in Los Angeles. That was like, I want to say it's like peak, but it was just like a really great, like, oh my gosh, like that's the height of wow, of what can happen on stage and audiences, you know, that exchange. But then when I turned to make stuff for myself, I was just looking for like a new frontier. I had gone to Los Angeles for graduate school and came back here to Boston in 2014 and was just sort of looking for like, okay, I really want to switch this up. And the collaborator that I was working with that company, David Rousseff Reality, the video artist on that, Carrie Ann Shimsham, moved to New York and started working with me. And her interest was like really the immersive and interactive, like how can we, she's just a real frontier pusher and really pushed me in so many ways, and we collaborated. So that was the turn where I was like, okay, working with her, the piece we made first together was called Dance Like No One Is Whale Watching, was a lab recipient. It's a immersive piece inside of an inflatable dome. So audience is in there with me. One day we'll try to launch it again. We all can be that close. And I think that's what started it. And then we did another piece together called CB Scene and another inflatable dome. And then this piece is kind of a continuation. Hi-Fi is a continuation of the immersive work. No inflatable dome.
I'm excited for these domes. I'm just like,
same.
I
want to they be are fun. Inflatable dome.
They are so fun. Like fun. I actually think I've seen an image of that. Were they blue? Yes.
Yeah, it was projected on. So the projections from the outside. So you can, it was so magical.
It's really hard to like imagine that, but I'm like, I absolutely want to see that. And I think that's so cool that it's so creative. It's so out the box and like you were saying, it's so immersive. And I think one thing that, you know, you spoke about early on, you said, you know, hopefully we can bring that back when we're together again. So speaking on like being together again, how have the events of the past year sort of affected your process? You know, how has what's been happening in the world affected your process creatively, emotionally, whatever? How has that affected you?
Yeah, quite a lot. We started our process for this most recent project on Zoom, and that is hard. That was a rough transition. There's a lot of like link sharing and like picture sharing and just two-dimensional sharing. And then we started getting towards the good times in May and June, if you remember.
Right.
And I was like, okay.
Pandemic? Where? Yeah.
Exactly. And we really interested in technology. We're interested in the technology of, I guess, mycelium, which is the roots of mushrooms. Like, what is that overlap? And we came upon, like, what is it like to completely not see or not use technology? And we had a no technology day, a whole day. We're not using our computers, not using our phones. And we decided to meet in Dorchester. We arrived there without our phones. We had to like memorize the directions, drive there, write them down. And we all met together in person for the first time. It was a moment when we all were like, do we hug each other? I don't really know. How do we do this? Right. Now we're 3D. And we had a great conversation. We went to this park and just chatted. And so that was, I mean, it was a great day, but it also was like a lot of speed bumps. Like, how do we do this? We've been talking so long and now we're meeting in person. And then switching over to being in the same room, working in a dance studio together. It almost felt like this process had to restart again. Like, that was the difficulty. Wow. We're just like, okay, and what? And then, there was a lot of that. As far as we did accomplish a showing, like come to a midpoint, we decided to have an invited audience, like all those technicalities, like we're gonna invite the audience, we're gonna require that they're vaxxed, we're gonna wear masks. What else do we need? Just list kept kind of growing or just trying to capture this moving target. Mm-hmm. So that was in late September. So I guess the process feels like two processes, and the one that's live feels really new still, even though we're like months into this. Very, very interesting.
And I feel like, I mean, this is even more complicated because this is a new collaboration, you were saying. This is the first time you all have met. So what was that process like? And then I also wonder, you know, when everyone comes in with their own, because each of you have your own artistic practice and thus your own artistic process. And so I'm wondering, when you have to kind of bring folks together in this way, how does that affect how you normally create?
Oh, wow. I would say that I'm the lead artist, but we're trying to do this collaboratively. And there's so many ways that can go, right? Like there can be percentages or it's all in. We didn't do that math beforehand, I think due to pandemic lack of focus. so we were kind of headed for that. And then sometimes it works and sometimes it's like, no, it's, you know, one person's doing this and it was, I'm going to call it organic, but sometimes it was like, what's happening? organic is a nice way. Yeah. Positive spin. But yeah, processes coming together. I'd say that some people had a very strong, strict, you know, way that they do things. They need the big picture and then they can, you know, make. Some people are like, I'm going to make this piece, that piece, this piece, and then together, that's the big picture. I was more like, okay, let's get in the room. It's going to like happen. And kind of none of those worked, but part of all of those worked.
Right.
So bringing those processes together, one person is a poet, you know, and they're like, you know, we're meeting every week, but like, I don't write on a schedule. I write when, you know, I'm really inspired. And the other person had to work with materials, and like finding a safe place to like build this material that she was trying to build was like a pandemic thing, and process thing. And we got, I think the studio and dance time was pretty seamless. We worked with At Arts Assemble, a Somerville Arts Council program that has a storefront that's turned into an art studio for music. Yeah, it's incredible. Music at certain decibel because it's surrounded by apartments, by theater and dance and media arts. Those are the ones. We're not there for visual art yet, but so that space was available, and that seemed pretty seamless. But yeah, the processes was really, really different. Kind of every time, like, how are we going to do this? How are we going to move stuff forward? What is the shape? Just trying to get those nails in the ground. And yeah, ultimately I was like, I've got to just make a deadline. I'm making a deadline. The deadline's this. Here we go. Like, let's steer towards that.
Yeah.
There's two questions in there, but I think I answered only the first one.
You answered both of them. Yeah. No.
Yeah, I agree. Oh, great. I pretty much got that all in there.
Okay, good.
So would you say that there is anything, I mean, you talked a little bit about the effect of the pandemic on how this project came together. I guess another two-parter. I'm notorious for two-parters, and I'm sorry. another piece of, you know, the past few years has also been, you know, this racial reckoning that's come about in this country. And so, one, how did that affect that process as well? And then two, did you learn anything, or do you feel like you'll take anything from how your process has shifted and doing those work and doing that work into how you kind of work in the future?
Great question. So I would say that initially we're like all the words about connection and the kind of focus towards that this performance is trying to offer really is a focus of kind of the lower behind the scenes project is to look at bias and our like unspoken story is that there is a interaction with a fungus that breaks that down. So that's like the subterranean.
Love that.
Kind of, yeah. We're still working on how that I think comes into the light personally. I don't think that we like it can be more out there. Our showing ended up being like three different examples of what the spoken word poet would do, what I would do as a dancer choreographer, and what the designer would offer. We just wanted to try those interactions with audiences, and then we loosely kind of strung everything else together. And that everything else together is where that should, I think, come forward more. But in our process, I think it was just like probably in the off the cuff conversations about this and that. I think at some point one person was said, oh, like we read the Declaration of Independence on July 4th, and it's like a farce. We read it like very theatrically. Another person was like, why? In this way that was like, I take that seriously. You know, like just really experiencing, like seeing how we experience the world very differently over this like document. And that was just it was around July 4th. Like, what are you doing? I'm doing this. So just having this all come together naturally brought that out. And I think in the months moving forward, I would like to talk about that more and see like where can that be forefronted. So the way that I will bring that forward, I don't want to say slow motion, but I'm behind others, actually, in my own household. My partner is much more like well-read and like, he's like on the thing, creating, you know, spoken word pieces about looking at his whiteness. Like, I'm like, okay, I'm making dances about mushrooms over here.
Right.
But underneath it, not that it's a
competition. Equally important work. Equally important work.
I think so. But I'm inspired by their focus. So moving forward is, I would like to look at that more, at my own whiteness. Like what I think, I feel like that is super key to moving forward. Yeah. So is a way that, I mean, if that could come into our process, amazing. I think it can.
Amazing. And I think that such an important part of that is being able to recognize within yourself first, right? Like it's difficult to go into the world and say, I'm pinpointing this, I'm pinpointing that. But it's like, if you aren't able to reconcile within yourself your own biases and how they affect the world and how they affect how you show up in the world, it can be very difficult to start to go out into the world without that realization, you know? So I think
Yeah, exactly.
So being able to identify the fact that you're at that step in your life where you need to sit with yourself and say, how do I appear? Or what is it that I'm doing that affects how I show up in the world? What does my whiteness mean to me? And what does my whiteness contribute in the society that I'm in? And the society that I live with, literally just my own household. How does my whiteness affect that? Love that. So also, if we just randomly start breaking out into song, just know that like this is what we do. This is what we do. You know, this is fully what we do. Jay and I will just break out into song at any given moment and we'll talk song, we'll song talk, whatever you call it. So speaking of yeah, you're ready to go. Speaking
join
of
us.
Like at any given moment, please. This is a safe and brave space.
Right.
Or you can do some dance moves to whatever we're singing.
I love it.
So we welcome it all. We really, really do. But speaking of sort of like creative process, I want to like shift us to a place of really honing in this idea of the lab, right? The laboratory, the space of experimentation, the space where ideas come to life, right? The space where iteration after iteration after iteration happen and you finally sort of craft this thing that you really want to put out into the world. So how does experimentation take place in your work, in the work that you do? How do you play? How do you, you know, figure out what is it that works for you? What doesn't work for you? And also how, you know, and we'll get to that, but also how does collaboration work in that process as well? But we can start off with just you individually.
Yeah. Experimentation. I need people for my experimentation. I make a lot of lists of like ideas and this and that, and I'm always just so amazed at how like most of them fall flat when I try to do them live with people. I'm like, oh yeah, this was made in my head.
Right.
Yeah.
And we are in life. So a lot of experimentation and also, to be honest, that's my known practice. That's what my choreographers that I've worked for, that's what we've done. And like, it is super time consuming and cost money, and if there was a, you know, other way, there's no other way. There's no other way for me. So that experimentation does require people, okay, back up, try this again. And the people that I'm, if it's artists I'm working with, does require some maturity to be like, we're just gonna make stuff, we're not gonna maybe keep it all or keep none of it. I just need to go through this process. So that's kind of how experimentation happens for me. With this turn in my work to immersive and interactive work, and now and roping in audiences too. So we do a lot of tests. Normally we do lots of test audiences where I said, I'm just gonna show you like a 15 minute clip. I'm gonna get some pizza and we're gonna talk about how that was for you. Like, so we kind of build in, we have to have test audiences for all of our work now. So that's how a lot of experimentation happens. They really, their presence shifts what's happening. And sometimes I can also improvise, if it's not too out there, improvise things while we're doing that audience work. So some experimentation happens there. That usually is met with some frustration from my co-artist, like, what are you doing? I'm like, I don't know, I just felt this thing go this way. And they're just like afterwards, like, oh, I'm like, sorry, but not sorry.
And how do you navigate that? Like, how do you navigate trying to do this whole experimentation thing and having sort of like that pushback? How does that affect your ability to continue to experiment in that space?
Well, it's taking me a couple of years to be like, ask for forgiveness later kind of vibe. Like, I need to do that. I'm conscious of my collaborators. Like, I try to limit what I'm experimenting with to kind of my realm. I don't want to mess up the projections if I'm working with the video artist. Like that, I try to stay in those boundaries. Just continue with the continual work on self-confidence to be like, yeah, I did it differently and it messed you up and I'm sorry, but it was really important. Like, it needed, like, knowing it needed to happen. That's just a constant, constant thing.
Now I have a question. So I'm wondering about the transferable skill or value or behavior of, you know, this risk-taking and this ability to defy convention and to follow and honor a moment as it arises. Do you feel like that comes up in, I hate to draw a line between art and our life, but in the less artistic-y, practice-y ways of our lives, does that come up as well? Or do you find that that's usually some skills and traits that kind of live more in the artistic space?
I think they're coming up. From something little as like negotiating with people, like, oh, like, does this, like, can we just turn it on this way and talk about that and try to make it not make it, but it is collaborative. So this is a collaborative conversation. I try to use some of the creativity there. I use a lot of creativity with my 3-year-old, lots of negotiation. I'm like, this is magic. You actually want to get dressed. so that comes up. Risk-taking, I feel recently, maybe there's just a little bump in my energy, but recently interested in that. I have to, like, talk to people about their practices for COVID, like, yes, we want to come over. What are you doing? Like, I never before kind of would kind of ask those questions, and learning how to soften them and making them funner conversations. So I do think that's happening. And there's some stuff brewing, like career professional wise, trying to land like a framework around that, which will include some risk-taking, moving my art into a different space for myself career-wise. Those are, I'm at the very beginning bubbles of that.
Love it. Following this kind of creativity rabbit hole, so obviously, yes, it comes up in your life a lot, but there are people who say, like, ugh, I'm not creative, I don't do that. Another double question. So one, do you believe that creativity is, this is a science question, nature or nurture, is it something you're born with? Is it something that can be developed? And as such, what do you say to those people that say that they're not creative?
Great question. No, I believe that everyone has creativity. I feel like you have to have creativity to survive. It is part of, you know, evolution. You have these molecules, but like how you're going to work with those and how they're going to work with your environment. You have to keep making this up, and you know, if you're standing in front of me, like you have,
right,
you've done some magic to deal with the things that you were dealt, the environment you were in. Mm-hmm. And now we're here, which kind of pulls me back into like why I love immersive work, because like whatever mm. history they have, or like that day 20 minutes before they come into the show, mm. that's there, and we are weaving our creativities together, if you will. So yeah, I don't think it's something that, I mean, you're nurturing, you're continuing to nurture it, but I think that you are born with it.
That's that.
And maybe, yeah, I hope I meet those people that say that. You just have to meet someone that's like, no, you are creative, like, and kind of point that out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I meet a lot of people. For me, I see it in two people. Either, you know, adults who feel like they've drawn a line between what's artistic and what's creative, which I don't think are always the same. And then as being someone who works with young people, that comes up for them a lot. Like when we're trying to, you know, just pull them like, okay, well, how can we do this differently? How can we say this differently? How can we present this information differently? And finding mm-hmm. that it's just not a muscle that unfortunately they've been allowed to develop. And so in their minds, mm-hmm. they just go, well, I can't, I don't have that in me. And it's, again, but it is a muscle that you need to develop. And so I think those are typically where I found that, at least.
No, that's really well said. Really well said. I mean, did you dress yourself this morning? You're creative. Like, you right. put that together.
Yeah. You know?
But mm-hmm. the idea that you have to turn around and if you're all collectively looking at one idea, mm-hmm. yeah, that muscle, that is true.
Yeah. I also love what you said about threading our creativity together. I'm just like, mm-hmm. I'm gonna put that in the little bank, the mind bank, and keep that for a while.
But okay, I also think it's something? Crazy mm-hmm. that, yeah, I think it's crazy that we don't, I think what society has told us is creativity is somewhat, can be one-sided. And I think that mm-hmm. identifying those things that you were saying about, did you put an outfit together today? That mm-hmm. is creativity. But people don't identify that as creativity.
Right.
Because they identify it as something that they have to do every single day. Right? Right. Like, it's not something that you can put together. It's not something that you can have fun with. It's not necessarily something, it's an everyday task that I need to survive. And it's like, but why can't we take those everyday tasks and turn them into something that we can identify as creative? Because they already are. You know, I think that we do such a disservice to ourselves, because it identifying those things as creativity, I think it opens up our minds and it opens up our imagination to say that like anything is possible, and I can literally do this thing in a way that is just like, that looks like this, but can also completely turn it around and have it be something completely different. Mm-hmm. So I think mm-hmm. our ability to identify creativity is something that we might need to work on. I know that I've definitely had a hard time with that as well.
Yeah, I think it's pushing against capitalism.
Amen. You know?
Mm. Like thinking like, oh, I gotta like put stuff on the stage, and if I don't put it on stage and people buy tickets or whatever, it's not worth anything.
Yeah.
It's like, that's not the case. Mm-hmm. You know, very creative people that will never be on the stage, and they're like my mm-hmm. top artists. I'm just like, mm-hmm. But who teaches you that? I mean, I can't really tell you who taught me that.
Well, I think you did.
Explicitly.
You know, I think you spoke about, explicitly, mm-hmm. but you spoke about your environment. You spoke about mm-hmm. where you grew up. You spoke about what your mom did. You spoke about what your family mm-hmm. did. They allowed that space for you to explore, right? You had this opportunity to plan these amazing little games. That's where it was born, because it was born from the freedom to do as you please, the freedom to just be a child and explore, right? And that was the example. And it's like, you didn't think of it like that because you didn't think to call it creativity, but the space, that the environment that you were in allowed you to explore the idea of creativity and to be free with it, you
know? And that's making me think that maybe they never said that it was creative, but they also never said that it wasn't. And I feel like that might be the difference, right? We're all born, yeah, with the magic and wanting to create, want to be in these spaces, but we're kind of stifled out of that or moved out of that and said, that's not useful, that's not helpful, that's not important. But it's like you shared about with your friend's mom, it was just like, ugh, thank you for what you're about to do for us, right? It's always been a thing of value or a thing at least that you've been allowed to explore. And I think, yeah, creating that space and having that freedom that you give to folks, I think is probably something that we don't even think about, right? Because even this is shifting something for me about like, maybe it's not always this explicit da-da-da-da-da-da-da, but really more about just, can I give you space to be and to explore and to experiment? So with that, isn't it? I'm just like, this is a moment. We're having a moment. Thank you.
We are all moment. Collectively having
a moment. Just shifted my brain.
Hello. I'm trying to go back to Emily's lab because it seems like, you know, it seems like amazing things happen.
This is a good lab. There is like something in the air here.
Lab.
Well done. Good use of unlimited times and the ability to bend the loss of space and time.
Yeah.
So from this collaborative back to yours. So obviously you're working with the Boston Foundation again to put together this new collaboration, this new project, which you've talked about a little bit. But do you mind telling us about this project, about HiFi and your collaborators and what specifically you're working on?
Yeah, sure. So the piece is, like we said, an interactive performance for an audience of 12, I think. And the collaborators are Umalini Mulaba Adebo and Rosa Weinberg. And I'm a dancer choreographer. Umalini is a spoken word poet, among a million other things. She'll fill you in. Rosa is a designer, an architect with an art practice. And we all are coming together to make this performance with the audience. Each performance is unique to the audience. We're all coming in through these different thresholds to essentially the idea is that you're entering the portal, and through the performance, through a lot of different activities collectively, we're raising the energy up to this point where it can switch from electric grid, which is not obviously not serving our planet, to another grid that's run on mushroom or mycelium. The connective network, there will be no visual technology. It is all underground, and everything works totally differently and collaboratively. At the close of it, we feast. So it's kind of it's a 45 minute right now piece, and has a bit of everything in there. And the project was started in January. We had a little showing in September, and we are looking for the perfect location for a public public show, somewhere between a basement, a garden, a greenhouse, lots of different places it could happen. So we're have our gallery, our feelers are out, actively out now, looking for that. So stay tuned. We'll everybody know when that will happen.
So exciting.
Two quick things.
Can you imagine this in a greenhouse? Oh my god!
I know, right? I think yes, I love that. Completely unrelated. Whenever you say like mycelial, I think of like this. Do you watch Star Trek Discovery? The newest Star Trek?
No.
There's Tell this whole through line. Yeah, there's this whole through line of like, indulge the nerd for a moment. There's this whole through line of like, you know, normally the ships in Star Trek, they like warp, but this particular ship developed a spore drive that found a mycelial network that connects all of space together. And so they basically like warp through the mycelial network to go in other places. And then the only ship.
I didn't know that.
I know. Okay. I was just like, maybe nobody knows this because you're talking mycelium and connections and sci-fi. Yeah. So that was cool.
Oh my gosh. I'm going to tell my collaborators are going to flip out. That's cool.
It's really cool. I think that's what the first season mainly deals with, if you care. And so the other thing I just wanted to lift up that I thought was so cool, you said this a while back, was not having that technology that day. And it really just made me think about, and I guess, how did that feel? You know what I mean? Like, needing to, like, you know, MapQuest, like, back in the day, in a way, and, like, just be out in the world and also not be reachable in that same way. Like, how was that?
Oh, boy. The No Tech Day, we kind of also, funny enough, announced on Facebook, too, like, hey, this is what, you know, three little people are doing. Mm-hmm. If you all want to do this, we did the day before. It took a lot of preparation, like, to cut the ties and be, like, talking to your partner, like, I'm not reachable, you know, at all from, like, 9 to 5 or whatever the day was, or 24 hours. One of our collaborators even walked from Cambridge to the park in Dorchester. She was just like, I don't want to ride a car. I want to, like, what is this to do that? Yeah. She ended up riding back with me. She's like, I can't do that.
That's fair. That's fair. Like, that's a bit of a journey.
That's a journey.
That is a journey.
But if you want, like, for example, it was wonderful. If I wanted to know what time it was, I had to talk to somebody who had a phone. I said, excuse me. Like, the interaction was, like, pushed. I had to look at a clock, which I was like, oh, yeah, there's a clock by the T station. Sure. Yeah, I remember. We said we'd meet at a certain time. We all ended up being there at the right time.
Wow.
I felt a little bit like a person out of a different time. Everyone else around me seemed to be moving faster. Like, we went in to get lunch at this grocery store and just, like, all this stuff. Like, I was just very more aware of, like, all the technology around us. And I felt really slow. It's just like, what do you want to eat? And, you know, there's nothing pressing. And I think, you know, it was a lot of preparation. I had to, like, clear the deck. You know, I don't know, not everyone can do this, you know, depends on a lot of factors. And then we didn't know what time it was. I'm like, well, okay. I feel like our conversation actually came to a end. We had no other things to say. It wasn't like, we got to go at 3. Oh my gosh, I'm totally fibbing. Sorry. I was like, I feel like it's around 2:45 and I need to go pick up my child. So actually we did have a limit, but it did feel like we were able to at least get
naturally
as far as
to
we could.
A place of closing. Yeah.
Yeah. So it felt good.
Wow.
We felt more present. Yeah.
That's
we did it once though.
So amazing.
It's like a cleanse.
We only have one time to do this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wanted to ask a follow-up question to that, because I think as you're saying this to me, I'm almost yearning for that experience. I'm
right.
Like, I would love to try that, you know? But I know that, you know, yes, absolutely. Like, it's a form of detox. But I guess I want to ask you, what was it like dealing with the internal versus the external?
Sure.
So what you were feeling on the inside versus the external of what was happening around you. But also, when I say internal, I mean in, like, your heart and in your mind. Like, was it difficult for you to be like, I don't need to see my phone right now. I'm good. Or was it like, oh my gosh, I need to see my phone right now. Look, or I need to see a watch right now. You know, what did that feel like?
Yeah, there certainly was, like, a knee-jerk reaction. Like, I need, like, just, you're addicted. You're addicted to, like, seeing the phone, or, like, someone might be writing me. That certainly was there. I personally have left my phone at home, not on purpose, more times than, yeah, sometimes. So I am familiar with the, like, panic, and then the, like, I'm going to survive this. And I know where to go if I need to run into that person. I know what I need to do, or I'm just going to have to ask someone for help. Like, that's what's on the table. And so that kind of, like, that was part of the preparation too. Like, I'm going to be talking to people, to strangers, you know, in this pandemic.
Yeah.
Like, are they going to let me, like, nearer to them, just, like, look at their phone or we'll see. So there certainly was that, a little panic. Overloaded, a little overloaded from what's going on, and maybe overloaded from internal, because maybe I, you know, thoughts weren't cut off by the phone notification or like off from my, or maybe, maybe I moved through like some uncomfortability because I look at my phone when I'm uncomfortable too. Like, you know, you like arrive somewhere to meet someone early. You know, we used to have great before cell phones, you used to like stare in space, I guess. But now you're like, oh, I'm busy. You know, I'm not, you don't appear to be alone. So you're like, look at your phone. So none of that. So maybe I did move through those, like all the way through those uncomfortable things. I would say that I was happy to have a companion with me, like on the ride back. I was like, okay, like, you know, I kind of liked having someone in the car with me because I couldn't use the radio, you know. I had to like drive in silence. It was crazy. I don't know why it's so crazy, but it was crazy.
That's why you pull a Jay and Nao and just start belting it out. You know what I mean?
Right.
Just
like, just got
a internal soundtrack always ready.
Yep. Absolutely.
Good point.
At any given moment, ready to go.
Ready to go. Keep a song in
you
your
give
heart.
Us a word. You give us a word right now, we'll be like, yep, right. We got it.
Got it. So yes, in closing, is there anything you want to share with folks? And then how can they connect with you and kind of follow more about the work and what you guys are doing?
Yeah. For folks, I would say, you know, feed your creativity as much as you can. Go to as much performance, support as much support performance as you can, live performance as it is safe for you. Get involved in processes and performances. Invite yourself to dress rehearsals. See how the food is made.
Yes.
There's so many ways that don't involve money. So, you know, connecting with artists and just following that way. I would encourage everyone. And as far as connecting to me, I'm on Facebook under my name, Emily Beatty. I have a website, emilybeatty.com. My email is on that. All Real Machina is my Instagram. And I think that's it. I'm very often in a dance studio if you're having a no tech day. and walking around looking at the sky. That's where I'll be.
Love that.
Thank you so much for this. This was great.
Yes. Thank you.
My pleasure. It's been so lovely to talk about this. And you two are just wonderful, warm artists. I really enjoyed my time. Thank you.
Absolutely.
We try our best.
And I have kernels and lessons. I love when I feel like I've grown or learned something after these conversations. And I definitely feel that way now. So
mutually, I also feel the same way. Thank you.
All right. Well, we'll talk soon.
All right. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Dexter's Lab is made possible by a partnership between the Boston Foundation and Dunamis. To learn more about the Boston Foundation, visit www.tbf.org. Follow on Instagram at BostonFDN and on Facebook at the Boston Foundation. You can follow Dunamis on all platforms at Dunamis Boston. That's D-U-N-A-M-I-S Boston. Or visit us at dunamisboston.org. Until next time, and thanks for listening. Stay creative.